Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to another Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are here to dissect Six Nations Round 3 in what has been an extremely eventful 48 hours or so of rugby union. I'm Tim. JB is right there.
Hello, Timothy.
Philip is right there.
Hello, Tim.
In a blue bull shirt. Well, a camouflage bull shirt.
I'm surprised you can see me in this. This is an ode to the Bulls after they beat my beloved Canes with a late try.
I want to start. Okay, so obviously, thank you for listening. You know where to find us. Hit subscribe because we will have a domestic focus podcast coming in our feed wherever you find your podcasts in a couple of days' time. But I want to start, and I think it's only right to start with the big game. Scotland, England. Scotland 8, England 43. England women's side totally dominating their opponents. Charlotte Pearce cutting some serious angles and going over the whitewash. Great, we've dealt with that game then. What next?
No, we don't need to talk about Scotland England anymore on this podcast.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm going to kick it off by being a smug and I'm going to say you were warned, unfortunately. And I think it just sort of proved what I had suspected, that all the winning had papered over the cracks and people weren't taking the situation seriously. And I'll give you an example. Owen Farrell's lack of tackling ability was really, I thought that was fairly well exposed. England have got some work to do.
So let me just stop you for a second. So JB, you're saying that what happened on Saturday was as you warned would happen.
Well, no, because I actually thought
because Charlie Balfour has done us a job. He's tweeted us at Rugby Podcast a quote, and I'm just going to read out some quotes from last week before we go too much on about downfall 2018. I told you,
I predicted an England win.
Just let me read out some quotes. Phil said last week. On the podcast in relation to the Scotland-England game, quote, Phil, they have got really dangerous backs and if Finn Russell actually plays well, it's on. Tim, I said last week of this game, quote, the Scotland backline is impressive. This is a big test. And then I also said, England's penalty count is the issue. They have to sort it out big time. You're right there, Phil?
Yeah. Mm. I'm just holding up a sign to JB.
Yes, okay.
and then JB's quote. So I said that the Scotland backline's impressive, it's a big test, and that England's penalty count is the key issue. Phil said the Scottish backs are incredible.
I said they would grind them into
dust. JB, quote. Phil said it's on, JB said, well, it's not really, is it? I'll tell you why. It's the quality of England's pack. Yeah. I just think the pack is so strong, that's where Scotland are going to struggle. England will grind Scotland into dust.
Well, I'm still actually amazed thinking about it that it did happen the way it did, because it was almost too perfect. The English pack, you look back at it now, you would still probably pick that pack to beat Scotland. I don't think the pack is inferior in any way, shape or form.
Well, I will just caveat that the athleticism that England's pack lacked was exposed.
Yeah, well, is it athleticism, would you say?
That's where I'm putting it down to, and that's probably a lazy catch-all to say they were simply not quick enough to get to the breakdown. Mm. And when they got there, they were getting there in ones and twos, and they weren't explosive enough to drive past the Scotland players who were exceptional at the breakdown.
I'll tell you a man who they missed mightily, and I'm just saying this because I said, you know, he might show up in the matchday squad, but is that not the job James Haskell does so amazingly well?
Well, you did say one of your predictions, and I counted five predictions that you made last week. One of those predictions was...
It's all very well counting predictions. If you want to count the predictions, put them on the damn board.
Well, no, these were your predictions.
I'm only happy with the ones on the board. That's why it exists.
So your five predictions included James Haskell will definitely start because he's Eddie's number one.
No, because Eddie does prioritise athleticism. It looks like they did need him.
Well, they needed someone in that back row. And I think this highlighted that against a back row that is smaller and more athletic, you can't afford to play three locks.
It's so difficult. I simply didn't see this happening.
No.
Based on the performances of last few weeks. But having said that, the warning signs were there and we've spoken about them at length. And I think the Farrell thing is baffling to me.
So I think you definitely deserve credit for two things that you have been saying for some time. One of which is Owen Farrell's tackling, which is something we both said last week. The other one is the stagnant and stale England attack.
Yeah.
Which, besides the Owen Farrell try, and they had a couple of breaks, but besides that, England's attack was not good.
Well, it was garbage against Wales, too.
First 20 minutes, it was good. I say good. They scored two tries first 20 minutes.
England look happy to me to grind out 20 phases and hope they just push over the line slowly. That seems to be their strategy. They don't have an attacking strategy.
No, I think they do. And it's this... George Ford doesn't seem to know what to do if he doesn't have his four men in that diamond around him.
Yeah, the one coming hard, the option out the back.
That's all they have. And see, I put this... I've watched the game again, and my thought when I look at England is actually they were just brain dead. And I wonder... And I think back to Italy in last year's Six Nations when they didn't problem solve on the fly. And that the sort of, I don't know whether it's, I don't know, I'm not suggesting this is, but I don't know whether it's overcoaching or a lack of rugby intelligence or a lack of leadership. I don't know what the reason is. But last year against Italy, to take 765 minutes to work out what to do when Italy came up with that little fox trap. And then what happened this weekend is Scotland played two sevens. England had their little attacking pattern, which actually needed them to commit more men to rucks to blow Scotland away from the ruck. And they didn't. They tried to do it with just one man. Maybe two men, mainly one man. Yep. And they kept doing the same thing again and expecting a different result. And they actually worked it out in the second half and they looked much better in the second half. They started committing more men. They started running a little bit narrower and harder. And as a result, England dominated the second half, but they just did not work it out. And it's the same defensively. There's been a lot of people saying about England's narrow defence and, oh, look, it got exposed. Yes, but England do have more than one way to defend. And in the second half, they changed. But they changed too late when they'd already lost three tries. Who's out there identifying these things and making changes on the fly? That's what worries me about England.
Yeah, I've got a few thoughts on that. So how I think about rucking is it's not really that important for the man supporting. It's the man taking the ball up. And when you watch England and they're playing in their most brutal style, they're not doing the absolute basics they need to do in order to free themselves up on the floor to make it easier for the next guy. I always refer to it because, basically, I heard some coaches up in Glasgow talking about it, and it makes a lot of sense. The 60-40 rule. You know, 60% of the work is done by the guy on the floor. So I don't think it's necessarily a case of the guys coming over.
It was one guy up against either Barkley or Watson who were absolutely outstanding on the floor.
You should be able to win that.
It's a risk you don't need to take. If you blow out the ruck, commit more men, then it negates the threat that those two sevens pose. And England did do that in the second half, and they were much better, but they didn't. So they just worked it out way too late. They're just brain dead.
The other thing I'd say as well is if the attacking pattern, and I call it a pattern. If there is something which involves him going through multiple phases, because that's all I can see him doing, going through multiple phases. If you've got two sevens on the field who are really good at the breakdown, why are you creating more breakdowns? You're better having less, more precise breakdowns, which you can work from. And that's what
I don't know if that's what England's plan is. When you look at the tries they scored in the Italy game, there were quite a lot of line out balls, set moves with that four, with the balls going behind. Yeah, but that's when they look most incisive. This is kind of what I'm picking up a theme, maybe, which is George Ford looks like he's really comfortable when he has his diamond all organised and off first phase or second phase, which is all planned. Yep. But actually, which means it's like when it's well coached and they know and they know what they're all doing, it looks great and it works brilliantly. And that Italy try, I can't remember which one it was.
I just don't think you should be basing the performance on Italy. Look at Wales, Rob.
No. I'm saying it as an extra thing. I'm like, people were going, oh, wow, look at that amazing move against Italy. That was a set-piece move off of a line-out. And actually, what I'm saying is, I think when I look over last year's Six Nations and look at that Scotland performance, it was just a real a lack of ability to change on the day.
Yeah, I wonder how much... So flexibility is actually in Eddie's system allowing them to change as well.
Well, I don't know about the flexibility, but I agree with your point about going in ones and twos. Now you can if the ball carrier if the ball carrier gets the front foot ball and gets a dominant carry, then one man can clear it out.
Yeah, and he gets the floor quick and he rolls and all the basic stuff.
Yeah, but England weren't getting that dominant break line, gain line hit. They were getting stopped at the gain line because Scotland's defence was very good. But then, because there was only one man clearing out, you had nothing. They should have identified that much earlier. And they did it for a period in the second half. But even, they got turned over twice in the last 5 minutes when they still could have got a bonus point or earlier on when they still could have scored a try. And they got turned over and gave away penalties. See, because even in the 75th minute, even in the 78th minute, they were still going in ones, yeah, ones and twos.
This is a great example, isn't it, of like how rugby goes in cycles. Because back rows are getting bigger. Courtney Laws in the back row probably is a symptom of this. Then all of a sudden, it's going to revert back to, actually, you do need people on the floor. And then they'll get bigger and they'll get used to dealing with people who are on the floor. And it'll just go around in cycles. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were saying it was a genius strategy by Australia to have two sevens. Then they get battered for the next 12 months.
And actually, you look at Scotland, and they did the consequence of them having Watson and Barkley is they weren't very threatening with ball in hand, winning the game line battle, and they didn't.
No.
But you don't need to win the game. They don't need to be great at winning the game line battle if, you know, the midfield of England is so soft.
And, well, we said, well, one of the points I made last week on your quotes was, if they can get parity in the forwards, their backs are as dangerous as anyone. And they didn't try and beat... So England tried to beat Scotland up front and failed. Scotland didn't try and... They just tried to get parity. And that laid the platform for Hugh Jones to have a sensational performance. Yeah. And Finn Russell.
Yeah.
Absolutely sensational.
Yeah. I will just say this. I will say this last thing. Do you know what Owen Farrell's tackle count was this week?
Well, so I know not only this week, I know for the past 2 years for England what his tackle count has been.
So it was made 5, missed 4. So I had a look to see if this was like, maybe I'm just being harsh, maybe I'm being an idiot. No. Brad Barrett, who plays in a very similar system to him and Gustard, missed 1 tackle today, I think got 18. Hadley Parks missed 2, made 18. None of the inside centres in the France game missed a tackle, I don't think. It is fairly unique, and I'll go back to what I said originally. The winning was paper overing the cracks of not particularly good performances. And when I thought England were really in trouble was when they went down, because I've never seen them come back really.
So on the defence,
just before we do any more, I think it would be important, and anyone Scottish would be thinking that we're underplaying what an outstanding performance it was. We're not. It was outstanding. And I think you could almost... It felt like the inverse of the Wales game. Whereas Wales, they were trying all these things and nothing came off. They tried it and it all came off.
That first half was... Mm. So Eddie Jones was comparing, in the week, was comparing Scotland to the All Blacks. And that first half, particularly from Scotland, was as close to All Black-esque as you could get. Yeah. Everything worked for them. They were sensational.
I don't really understand Hugh Jones. I don't know how he does it. Oh, he's always scoring. I mean, someone must have watched a video of him at some point to work out what is he doing different to everyone else.
Well, the try where he bust down the left, that was just, Finn Russell will try that pass 10 times and 9 times it won't be so perfect that Hugh Jones can run onto it at full pace and... Yeah.
that when they broke out basically at their own 22.
It was sensational.
What impressed me about Finn Russell, just as much as his general play, was his kicking. His kicking out of the hand. Some of them.
Yeah. Well, and England's kicking game was awful. So awful.
That is a really good point, that England took on Scotland in the kicking battle and were sorely beaten. Scotland's kicking from Hogg, from Laidlaw, from Finn Russell, who dropped back and numerous times, from Peter Horn as well, who kicked intelligently.
Versus how many times did England kick it and you gave Hogg 20 metres of space?
Yeah, just kicking aimlessly down Hogg, Seymour, Hugh Jones's throats to either return an intelligent kick or run it back.
And they're great at punishing. Well, they did.
Yeah. Yeah, Scotland deserve huge credit.
And there's one other thing which I just want to... I've been really looking forward to saying this because I mean it wholeheartedly. Any criticism of Nigel Owens from an English perspective, massively unfair. He was loose in his style, but I like that about him. He lets the boys play generally.
He does.
He might have got some decisions possibly wrong. Maybe there was a knock-on here or there, and that's fine. But I just want to say, and I would just think back a couple of weeks to England-Wales, I'd say this to a lot of people that I saw on Twitter and who had a chat to me from a Welsh persuasion. I want to say about Nigel Owens, he may have got a couple of things wrong, but it would not have changed the outcome of the game. The best team won, so it is not even worth taking any time to complain about the minutiae of any decision. Mic drop.
Agreed. Absolutely agree. Couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. And there have been a few English fans on social media complaining. Yeah. Let's not give him the time.
No.
Good. Okay, so I've got a question for you. Is downfall 2018 a real thing now?
Well, one swallow doesn't make a summer.
Nope.
No.
But some of the points that you... bless you.
Excuse me.
You're really struggling today, aren't you?
Yeah.
So some of the points you have made are valid. The two that I mentioned before, the blunt attack, definitely the attack has been poor in the Six Nations, apart from the Italy game, which is... it doesn't tell you very much.
Yep.
And so I will just briefly go into the Owen Farrell defence.
Yes, please.
Because it is a point that you made. And a few people on Twitter have been disagreeing with you and saying it's the way that Saracens play.
Yes.
It's the way that Gustard... and that, so that is definitely a thing. So Saracens do make...
The try, for example, that was never Farrell's fault.
The Hugh Jones.
Yeah.
I think it was.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not his man.
It actually was his man. It was him coming an inside line. He left him because he thought Nathan Hughes was coming across, but Hughes didn't come across. There was no one outside. There was no reason. I've watched that over and over again. There was absolutely no reason why Farrell couldn't have stepped in and it was a double man smash because there was no one outside Hugh Jones. Hugh Jones was coming from Farrell's outside shoulder to his inside shoulder. Farrell could have completely there stepped in, smashed him.
Oh,
but
see,
he didn't.
I looked at that and thought that's Hughes's man. But Mako Vunipola was ambling to the defensive line inside Hughes.
Hughes should have made the tackle.
Yeah,
but there is no reason why Farrell should not have stepped in. And I think
if you were dissecting that, you go in. You could have stepped in, but he wasn't your man.
Well, that's where. But, so I think he was Farrell's man. I think so. When you immediately line
him
off,
when you're close to your line, you blitz it anyway. You hit whoever's there.
Well, on that one, when you line him off, it was Farrell's man. He could have left him if Hughes was coming across, but for me, it was the wrong decision.
Mm.
And it's very easy to say that with hindsight.
Tell me about the stats.
So, Saracens do miss as many tackles as anyone else, but because of their swarm defence, it works.
And Scotland missed more tackles than England.
Yep.
Yeah. But so I've looked at this. So last 2 years of Brad Barrett playing 12 in that Saracens defence compared to the last 2 years of Farrell playing 12 for England.
Yeah.
Brad Barrett in that defence has missed... He makes one missed tackle for every 10 tackles that he completes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
What do you think Owens Farrell?
I would say it's more like 60 to 70%. So I'd say he's missing 3 for every 10.
3 for every 10. Tim?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
He misses one tackle for every 2 that he makes.
Bloody hell.
So he misses 1 in 3 tackles, whereas Brad Barrett is missing 1 in 11.
So I'm not far off.
Well, you said two different things, didn't you?
Well, if it's
doesn't matter.
If it's 1 in 3, it's about 60%.
Yeah, but then you said 3 in 10.
He misses 3 in 10. Yeah, so... 70%.
Kind of like your downfall and then saying that England are going to win. If you say both, well, if you say both directions, you're always going to be right.
Let's just break this down again. Right. If I asked you who is going to win the upcoming Manchester United Man City game, you'd use the information available to you. You would change your opinion as and when the game came up. And
but actually, then it's interesting that you don't back your last opinion. No. You stick
that's
with the
why
one
we
that
have
suits.
A whiteboard. That's why we have a whiteboard. That's why you bought it, and that's why it's there. So you're going to have to live with that. I said at the start of the competition, it's going to be Ireland, it's going to be Scotland. Although, if you gave me the choice again, to pick that game again, I'd still go with England.
If they played tomorrow, it's interesting now.
Yeah, if they played, I'd still go with England.
Tim, if they played tomorrow, who would you pick? Exactly the same team, same lineup in Murrayfield.
See, this is a really interesting one because I think it's been a very lazy reaction of people to say, "Oh, England were arrogant and thought they just needed to turn up and win." That's just such a simplified way to look at it. I don't buy that at all.
Been tired?
Well, this is an interesting thing, and this is where potentially it's not agreeing with downfall 2018, but it's not disagreeing with it either.
There's definitely some merit to the argument.
Exactly what we've said before. The Aviva Premiership teams have looked really poor in Europe. Saracens have struggled, as a club this season, and you can't tell me Maro Itoje looks anything like the player he was a year ago. He's nowhere near. As an example, and that's not criticising him per se, Mako Vinopola is not the player he was a year ago.
That is definitely a good example.
I think those two are good examples.
So they look to me like they just need a couple of months doing nothing, sitting on a beach.
Yeah,
they have been flogged.
Yeah, and I don't understand that. I mean, they're mid-season.
Well, because we're in a 12-team domestic league where you can't...
No, I mean, their actual England training has been like a pre-season.
Yeah, well, that's it. They've been going. Yeah, that's where Baffles I kind me. Of agree. They've been being beasted by England. They've been. They're playing every minute that their club can get them out on the field in big European games, domestic games, because the league is so competitive. And I do think there's something to it. There's a lot of players that are flagging, and the Irish model looks brilliant right now.
Yeah, there's definitely an advantage of the IRFU being able to dictate when players play, rather than Mark McCall, for example, knowing he's lost four games on the bounce and he has to play all of his stars every game.
Because they will come back straight into the Leinster game.
Yeah. Absolutely they will.
They have a couple of weeks, They'll have.
Is it a couple of weeks or is it the weekend after?
I'm sure there's one weekend after where
Premiership and then
Premiership and then it'll be Europe.
And we've got these big tests in, is it June against South Africa?
South Africa, three tests in June.
I'm tempted to just say
that is 3-0 South Africa.
3-0 South Africa. And South Africa are probably going to have all their international players from Europe back involved.
Yeah, you were saying this before the stop podcast.
Razzy Erasmus is trying to push for that for this summer and for the Tri-Nations and stuff and for... or probably for the summer. And then also, there's a bit of me that's tempted to say to a bunch of England players, just go and do anything but rugby.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot of them won't be making the World Cup. I don't think Ford is looking like a World Cup starter. I don't think Brown looks like a World Cup starter.
Well, Brown did last week, though, against Wales.
But he's going to be 2 years old. 2 years older? Yeah.
18 months older than he is now.
And there's no immediate replacement. Oh, Anthony Watson, I guess.
Yeah.
Not convinced.
See, yesterday was a day when I would have loved to have seen Jack Knowles starting on the wing. It was that he's the kind of guy England needed, a little terrier that's going to go looking for work.
Do loads of work.
Do loads of work.
Carrying. Yeah.
Carrying short off the 10. And
yeah.
They need a new attacking strategy ASAP.
So we have got, just to kind of bookend the England game, we've got another week before they play again, so they're not playing this weekend. But if you're going to make, let's say, one or two key changes for the next game, it could be tactical or it could be positional, what would you do?
I think they have to stick the course. I think they've got to go into the France game with the same mentality that they would have if they'd have won the Scotland game. That's what they're good at. And I don't think they can change it overnight. I think it's going to have to be a process. Having said that, the way that they play, do you know what they do? Maybe this is harsh. There's a little bit of top 14 about their forward play. I'm not sure I'd like to take on the best of the top 14 at a top 14 game. Well, and if Owen Farrell struggles with Hugh Jones running down his channel. I'm not sure what he's going to do trying to put big shots on Bastro. That's a nightmare.
I want to see, but going back to what I said initially, whereas they just looked a bit brain dead and like they weren't reacting, I want to see key players in key positions and making decisions and being smart. So for that reason, I want Farrell in a 10 shirt, I want Teo at 12, I want Joseph at 13, and I think that might open up Joseph as an attacking force.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think that probably is what I would look to do.
And on those lines, in terms of decision makers, I would probably drop Hartley as well. So not that his decision making has been poor, but I think he's there for his decision making, and he is offering
and set piece, which hasn't been like scrum. That's credit Scotland. Their scrum was outstanding. Bearing in mind, and McAnally, one of the finds of the Six Nations.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, and he's
drinking from
explosive.
Drinking from the
Calcutta Cup.
We've got a small video of that.
Oh yeah, wasn't there a video of them all absolutely smashed out in a club?
Yes. Greg Laidlaw.
Yeah,
the most drunk man in Scotland, and that is saying something.
Well, JB and I at the... Are we allowed to say... Yeah, we can, because there was no videos or anything. There were some Scotland boys after the Australia win who made their way to the World Rugby Awards in Monaco, and they were having an extremely good night. And as we left, there was one of them barely able to stand, waiting for a taxi.
They were celebrating vigorously.
They were celebrating by... taking over from the band that were on the stage.
Now, tell me this.
Awesome. That is a hell of a team bonding. Yeah. That Scotland team, for that experience, will be so much stronger for the whole thing.
I mean, they must get on... I know they do get on quite well because they're all basically in Glasgow.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a nice club to be at. They've got their stuff together. Now, just on the Scotland performance, is it sustainable?
I'm going to say no. I want to give them huge credit. They played outstandingly well. They tactically outfoxed England, and the things that they tried came off. And absolute credit to them. But I think you look at the Wales game and you look at the England game, and there wasn't a huge amount of difference in what they were attempting. There was a huge amount of difference in the accuracy and the execution. And that's where it comes down to Scotland for me. I don't think they're a team that are going to advance to the latest stages of competitions because they're not going to be able to string seven performances together in a row.
Yeah. I probably do agree with that. I think it is worth remembering that 2 years ago, different coaching structure... similar personnel but not entirely the same, they were minutes away from a World Cup semi-final.
Yes, they were. But then last year, similar personnel got absolutely battered at Twickenham.
Oh, they, what was it, 64-12 or something like that?
I mean, very similar personnel. Probably the worst front row.
Yeah, actually, both those things are very good examples of what you've just said, Tim. The inconsistency of the way that they play, because they do play quite high-risk rugby. And if... I mean, that phenomenal pass, and there were multiple phenomenal passes this weekend, but that phenomenal pass that you mentioned before from Finn Russell to Hugh Jones for his exquisite break, if that was a couple of inches either way, a foot in any direction, and it bounces, Jonathan Joseph picks it up and he just canters under the post.
Yep.
As Gareth Davis did.
Yeah. So if your execution isn't absolutely spot on, and Danny Kerr almost did it if he wasn't pulled back. Yeah, that kind of high risk rugby, high reward when it works.
Yeah,
tough to be consistent.
Well, but there you go. They've got 18 months to make that to bed that in.
Marcus Smith.
It's fantastic to see them playing the way they're playing.
Scotland to bed.
Scotland.
That in.
Yeah.
I thought you meant England to put it right and bed in Marcus Smith. Just in time for the World Cup.
Anything you would change, Phil, from England?
It's
back
tough.
Row. It was got a lot of attention.
I wouldn't play three locks unless it's horrendous conditions. So I think you need the size and you want the extra line-out options if it's pouring down and freezing cold. It was cold in Edinburgh, but the conditions were actually pretty good, and the quality of the rugby showed that. So I would want someone more mobile. And I probably would have started Robshaw and Underhill in those conditions.
I love Underhill. I just love him.
Yeah.
If I was England, I wouldn't play him again. I wouldn't let Bath play him. I wouldn't play him until the World Cup.
Underhill.
He wouldn't play a single second of rugby until the World Cup. And not, maybe not until he advanced outside of the group stages.
And he's kind of he proved that with his first game for Bath, that he doesn't need to have had loads of rugby. Yeah. He can have a long layoff and then just come back in, just the 26 tackles.
Yeah, the way that he plays as well, it's not like... It's physicality and athleticism rather than like intricate detail and skill.
Yeah, he's got a very rare mindset.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he's got some great physical attributes to do what he does. But God, imagine having those thought processes as massive men run towards you, right? You're getting banged.
No,
He's a normal-sized bloke. He's a man.
Having said about the Nigel Owens, I'm not going to criticise the decision for the yellow card. There are a lot of people that were saying it should be a red. And I understand.
Yellow's fine.
With the letter of the law, the way it is, that's fine. But I just want to defend Sam Underhill. He was clearly had his arms in a position to try and grab the ball.
No, mate.
You could see he had his hands like a kid doing a crocodile mouth. So he had his hands like that and he was targeting the ball.
I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, it's okay.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. Fact.
I'm not just saying this because I said it in the past. I'd bring back Haskell for the France game.
No.
I'm not sure that'll happen.
No.
But England could have done with his work rate at the breakdown.
Damn right they could.
I agree with that.
I don't think it was a lack of work rate. It was just a lack of bodies. They just didn't put anyone there.
That's exactly why.
Yeah, but that's a... That's a system and a brain failure. That's not a skill failure.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a desire failure.
I don't know that I agree with that. But fair enough. I just want to say thank you to Scotland for meaning I had a very uncomfortable half a rugby. Not just watching it, but I happened to be on this table. Having had quite a boozy brunch, I was sat on a table next to some Scots who were giving it, and I was sort of... being a cocky Englishman back and said, I had a picture of Guinness and said, oh, you haven't scored a try here. Because I was just basically parroting Phil's stat from last week's podcast. You haven't scored a try against England at Murrayfield since 2004. Simon Danielli, I was impressing him with that stat. I went, I'll down a Guinness every time Scotland score. So three in about 15 minutes, having already had quite
Hugh
a few.
Hugh Jones again.
Yeah.
Not Hugh Jones.
Yes.
Well, let's move on from Finn Russell's excellent passing and let's talk about Scott Williams' pass, because that was something quite incredible.
Scott Williams' pass?
Did you not see it? Like the first 2 minutes to try and get on the outside of... try and get on the outside of Ireland from his own 22.
No, I missed the first 2 minutes.
Oh, it was delightful. He doesn't really look at where he's passing the ball. He throws it on the floor and he throws it about 2 feet forward. In his own 22. And we'll get into that in great detail after Tim tells you about Cornerstone.
Yes, the best razor on the market that we believe you can get. And you can get it in a beautiful Cornerstone presentation box delivered straight to you with a cartridge full of 6 precision German-engineered razors, a free aluminium metal shaft with your initials engraved on it or whatever you would like engraved on it. Perfect present for someone as well. And you get that for less than the cost of a pint. £4 to give it a go, because you get a great deal because you listen to us. Cornerstone are the original mail order razor company. Others are trying to copy them, but they haven't got that beautiful aluminium shaft. They haven't got the German precision engineered award winning razors that Cornerstone have. And we think you'll love it. So if you go to www.cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, that's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or at checkout,
Egg10.
Make sure you do one of those things and you will get the benefit of the offer from us, and you will get it for £4 with no obligation, although we think you'll love it.
Agreed. So anyone watch the Wales game?
Yeah.
Yes, although I missed that pass for some reason.
Yeah, I missed that pass as well.
It's right at the start. So have you seen the first Ireland try? Because that is an amazing pass.
Now, that is... Oh. So there were 3 amazing passes. Finn Russell to Hugh Jones, Danny Kerr to Owen Farrell, and I think the best of them all was Sexton,
you know,
to Stockers.
It reminds me of like a very flat rugby league pass. You know, when they just ship it out wide immediately.
It was so fast.
Yeah.
Both the speed that the bullet travelled, but so fast from touching him.
Does he bullet pass it? Was he just...
It was a spin pass.
Was it?
It was remarkable.
So that first try is direct result of the Scott Williams attempt.
Was it? Right,
so
okay.
It comes... I can't remember where it's come from, but Scott Williams, I think, has seen that... I think it's Porter on the wing, and he's up against the Steph Evans.
Steph Evans, yeah. That's so, a match you like.
Yep. So he doesn't really look, and he wings it forward. It's gone about 3 yards, 3 yards forward, and hits the ground.
But by the way, what are Ireland doing that guys that you'd be forgiven for not even having heard of 2 years ago are looking every bit international players? James Ryan.
Yeah.
Dan Levy.
Yeah.
Chris Farrell. And you mentioned Andrew Porter. His 10th ever game at tight head prop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff, isn't it?
Just ridiculous.
Yeah, I was concerned about Porter, having seen
him scrubbage.
Yeah, up
against that front row.
Yeah, when he came on in the France game, he did struggle, but he was brilliant.
Well, you know, if you're good enough to play for Leinster or Ulster or Connacht or whoever
He didn't want to make the transition. He resisted the transition to tight head prop, apparently.
Really?
And it's not an easy transition to make, is it?
Well, a loose head.
Loose head. Yeah. But that was at Joe Schmidt's request, and another bit of genius from Joe Schmidt.
Yeah.
Because, wow.
Well, he's pretty stacked at loose heads as well.
Yeah, and Keane Healy had a great game.
Yeah, he did. And deserved a try.
Yeah, James Ryan, I'd really like him. And Chris Farrell, I hadn't seen a great amount of him. Yeah. And then he comes up with a man of the match performance and looks just international class.
Yeah.
I've seen him a few times for Munster, and I've got to say, he doesn't look that good for Munster.
I've seen him again. A handful of times,
yeah,
but never been as impressed with him at Munster as he was there. But this is a great example of this. Josh Navidi playing in the Autumn Internationals. I'd seen him for Ospreys many times, and Cardiff many times. He's always been solid, but never exceptional. And then he has been brilliant, and he got two assists in this game.
Well, we were talking about a player, and we won't talk about the actual player now, but. You know, of a certain standard, and if you give a player of a certain standard and a go in international, there is every chance that they'll raise their game,
as Don Armand undoubtedly would.
Don Armand,
he'd have smashed a few rucks this weekend.
Oh, he probably would have won that game single handedly.
Yeah, and what's happened to Keith Earls playing the rugby of his life?
Yeah.
God, I remember Keith Earls going on the Lions tour as was he 19 or something?
In 2009.
Yeah, to South Africa.
I actually think the margin of defeat flattered Wales quite a lot in the end. I thought Ireland were absolutely dominant, and Wales were. I was really disappointed with them.
They came back into it well. So I thought.
If Sexton had his kicking boots, then they'd have been out of sight.
He missed, 8 points in the first half?
Yeah.
But. Just after half-time, when Ireland had been dominant for a little period, they'd score again shortly after half-time. You think, right, this is going to be quite big. But Wales did come back into it well. And those two tries to give them... I mean, they were 3 points off as it hit 80 minutes, and if it wasn't for that intercept, it could have well been a Wales victory.
If that looped pass had gone to Tipperick, I think it was, with George North outside him, I think, they may have scored. But that would be the concern from Ireland, that Sexton looks like he's carrying a knock. He stopped kicking and Conor Murray took over.
Remind me what happens when Sexton doesn't play. Who plays then?
Well, it used to be Paddy Jackson, didn't it? But it's Carberry now.
Oof. I mean, that must keep the Ireland selectors up all night, just wondering about Johnny Sexton.
But the way it's going, I'm sure Robbie Henshaw would have kept them up, but Chris Farrell, I'll do a job. Joey Carberry will come in. He was in that team that beat New Zealand, don't forget, in Chicago.
Yeah, he came in last Thursday, was it? Something like that. Pretty impressive. I would say Wales are probably pretty happy with where they are, though. I mean, obviously they want to
be reckon?
Doing, obviously they want to be doing better than they are in this year's Six Nations, but there is clear progress. And I think they'll be very happy with us, strength and depth, how they're playing, that kind of stuff. I mean, they're not the finished article. But if you look at them, say, compared to England, I think England will be more disappointed because they look like they're going backwards. I think Wales still feel like they're building into something else.
Oh, I think they'll be very disappointed with that Ireland game. And as I say, I think that even with Stocker's late try, I think the scoreline flattered them. But
it's interesting. You've got the rugby paper there, Tim.
Yeah.
I read the interview or the post-match comments from Gatland.
From Gatland.
He said two interesting things for me. There's probably more to take out of it, but he congratulated Joe Schmidt and Ireland, and he said he owed Joe Schmidt an apology because 2 years ago he said they only play a certain way and they don't try and play rugby.
Mm.
And they played some excellent rugby. Some of their passing and some of their running was brilliant, and he credited them. He also interestingly said he's going to look to use the Six Nations to kind of build an experiment.
Yeah.
Now, rather than... Cause
what, now they can't win.
Now they're... Yeah. Now that they're effectively out of it.
I mean, the Pratchell experiment looked good for one game against Scotland. And actually, what a game that is, looking back at this weekend's... results.
Yeah, you're right. That result.
Yeah, I'd like to see him come back into contention, though.
So that's where... Having watched the game, I think that was his mistake, not playing Patchell or Anscombe at 10.
Yeah.
Because Bigger is an exceptional talent. He didn't have a very good game. He didn't play the open rugby that probably would have suited Wales to try and play.
Yeah, he does what he does.
You know exactly what you're getting from Dan Bigger, and it probably wasn't best for Wales in this scenario.
Completely agreed.
And I think...
That's easy to say that, but had Bigger been available and not used, and then Wales lost, we'd be sat here going, why are you leaving a class act with 60-odd caps like Dan Bigger on the bench? Or...
And that's why it's very easy for us to be behind a microphone and not making the big decisions, because we can
if they want to give us a job, I'll make the big decisions. I'm fine with that.
We can just criticise whatever decision makes Wales lose. Yeah. But it did, for me, that was a mistake.
But yeah, if you just look through the Wales team, I think they're going to be pretty happy with their front row going forward into the World Cup. They're going to be pretty happy with the halfbacks. I think Dave is having a storming Six Nations.
Their back row options.
Are absolutely stacked.
Thomas Young has had another absolutely incredible performance for Wasps and cannot get anywhere near the Wales squad.
They're so stacked on back row.
It's crazy.
This back row, a year ago, would have been second or third choice.
Yeah.
Because their out-and-out first choice has always been, I say always, has for the past couple of seasons been Warbs, Tips, Toby.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, Lydiot as well. To a certain degree.
Not for a few years, though.
Yeah, Tips. I mean, he's not played much at all, really.
He's been on the bench.
Warburton has to play when he's fit. Regardless of what style you're playing, Warburton just plays.
Yeah, agreed.
Toby just plays.
Yeah, agreed.
And then who do you put in the other one? I think
Shingler is probably the one. Because Shingler gives you the line-out option. His handling's so good. And he's very, very athletic. Deceptively athletic for someone so kind of rangy.
Yeah, I think they'll be happy with their centres. I think Hadley Parks and Scott Williams are... the real deal.
And JD2 to come back.
JD2's to come. But does he... I don't think
he's... Not JD2. After JD. The Lions tour, he's JD. Just JD. Yeah, yeah.
JD. So,
but, even when he comes back for the Scarlets, as good as he is, he's going to have to work to get back into that partnership. He's going to have to wait for his opportunity to get back in.
Yeah.
And I think they're back three. They like Halfpenny, they like Williams, and they like Steph Evans.
And you've got North and Josh Adams.
Yeah.
Being able to blood Josh Adams is very good.
So I think Wales would be very happy with where they are. Now, if they don't progress, the whole thing's a waste of time. But if they do, they could be one serious team come World Cup time.
Yeah, and you've got more experience for your second choice, or what would be your second choice, but is now your first choice come half.
Yeah,
because Gareth Davies finished off that try beautifully.
So good, isn't he? But he gets so much stick in Wales because apparently he's not quite intelligent enough, which I don't see myself.
Oh, and he's just a good all-round player.
If he loses a yard of pace, he's going to be a lot less effective.
True. He still have a few yards.
Yeah,
but...
still a few yards left. Reece Webb is the interesting one. Do they somehow get him back in the fold?
For the World Cup?
Yeah.
Well, we can... I'm sure they can change rules however they need to. I've just been sent is a little screen grab. And it's two pictures next to each other. That on the one side, as you can see, it's just jumping back for a second, but it's Greg Laidlaw holding the Calcutta Cup up to Murrayfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the other half, it's the Calcutta Cup match from a year ago when Greg Laidlaw was in the studio and the caption underneath his name when he first came up, I think it was on BBC, was Greg Laidlaw lost each of five tests v England.
Oh, that video. I love that video.
I also am going to credit... Brian Moore for just purely for the fact that he corrected himself mid-sentence to change less to fewer. He said something like England have conceded less of fewer penalties since in this second half. I appreciated the effort to correct himself.
He probably just got confused. There are a legion of talented people out there that need to have his job.
So, any more points from Ireland Wales? Or shall we dive into the last game of the weekend? The Friday night.
Yeah, I've got nothing more to say about Ireland Wales. I'm done with that.
The omni shambles that was France Italy.
France eventually showed they had enough. They made so many elementary errors throughout this game. Kicking straight out from outside their 22, or the ball getting taken back in and kicking straight out. So many knock-ons and so many handling errors that the game never really got going. But France ultimately did have enough. And one man in particular who was head and shoulders above everyone else on the park.
One of my favourite players.
Mathieu Bastereau.
Bastereau.
I love
was him. Sensational. I can honestly say that's the best game I've ever seen Bastereau.
Yeah. Really? Which is ridiculous. Like, let's just say this other thing about him. An international rugby player should not look like Mathieu Bastereau looks.
But he's so outstanding. I mean, I've...
Imagine how good he would be.
I don't know if that's true.
10 kilos of dead weight was shed. He'd be that bit quicker. And it wouldn't have a negative effect.
I mean, I'm happy for him to get 10 kilos of extra good weight. That's what I'll...
Yeah.
If it was a prop that looks like Mathieu Bastereau, we'd be saying they look a bit out of shape. He's an international outside centre.
Yeah, it's incredible that he can perform.
It is amazing.
Like
it's genuinely incredible.
He does some. I mean, the knock on him is sometimes he switches off.
But yeah, I have seen games where he's just been walking around and completely disinterested.
Yeah, I mean, he had a carb crash.
I think it's Matt Gitto who was explaining that he is simply the best player in the world at a few certain things. You know, there are certain lines
eating.
That he can run. Yep, eating. Certain lines that he can run, you know, offloading through the tackle. And he's bloody brilliant.
Yeah, he really is.
So he's always been brilliant at that
when
he's interested. The reason why I say it's the best performance he's ever had, it's one of the first times where I've seen the deft handling.
Really?
Yeah.
I've not sort of a very good handler, actually.
I've not seen some of the passes. There was one very quick hands in midfield that I've just not seen it before.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always think about him, like, anyone who's criticising him, it is funny because of his body shape, blah, 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 but they've not really bothered to study what he does. And there is a reason. I think he's got 3 European Cups to his name. You know, he's actually a pretty highly decorated player.
Oh, I'm not criticising him.
No one in here is. Yeah, but, you look through social media and, you know, he has been subject of... And because he's so unusual. I mean, would he play Freddie Jones? No. And probably rightly so, actually. You've almost got to build your team around what he does well.
He's a big factor, yeah. And he's probably one of the highest paid players in Europe as well. Which is normally a good indication of whether someone's pretty good. The market doesn't lie.
Yeah. I tell you what, I can't wait to see. And I'm sure you guys can wait. But what's Owen Farrell going to do about Mathieu Bastereau running down his channel? Because his tactic of hitting people really hard isn't going to work, is it? He's going to have to actually tackle.
They need... So this is a great point about England's back row, actually. Because if you've got a super hard-working back row, and... Well, you probably need at least 2 of them. So I want to say
Rob Shaw came out of that game with credit for me. He was the only England forward that actually went for it at the breakdown, and he worked his nuts off.
But I think England need to protect Farrell. They probably need at least 2. So you need 2 of Haskell, Rob Shaw, Simmons, Underhill.
Yeah.
Armand. Brendan O'Connor.
Yeah. Yeah, Brendan O'Connor had a good game today.
He's so good, isn't he?
Good. One of the Curries. So you need kind of 2 of them. Mark Wilson.
Well, I tell you what you can do. You can actually get 2 Curries. that is possible.
So you need them to get into that centre position. Kind of like Joe Worsley did 10 years ago against Jamie Roberts. To just put his body, get in there every single chance he can and stop him. Otherwise, Farrell could get badly exposed. I say Farrell, Ford, Joseph could get badly exposed.
Yeah, and I think they might do on the weekend, actually. What else did I not like about this game? What did I like? What I didn't like about it is I loved the venue of Marseille. I'd love them to play more games in Marseille. I didn't like it wasn't so busy, though. There was a lot of empty seats. And that
that's disappointing, isn't it?
I'd love them to say England to Marseille.
Yeah.
That'd be absolutely electric.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of just taking games around more generally, anyway.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, do you know what? It works in some countries, not in others. I mean, obviously, the Celtic nations, it's not going to work because there's nobody else, nowhere else to play the dumb games. You know, you're either Edinburgh. I mean, you could move a game to Glasgow, to be fair.
You could do, yeah. But I mean, given that they're about 40 miles apart,
yeah, and Glasgow's it's got kind of irrelevant. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right? England did try moving a game up to Manchester, and it wasn't overly successful. I think they played one in Newcastle as well.
The game in Manchester was
Uruguay.
For the World Cup.
Argentina here as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, at Old Trafford.
Yeah. And years ago at Old Trafford, they had Banners making his debut, I think, and Richard Cockerell going up to Norm Hewitt and going up nose to nose at the Hacker. I'm pretty sure that was Old Trafford.
Was it?
Wow.
Was it Anfield?
No, it was Old Trafford.
Because there has been rugby played at Anfield as well. Notably, Wales played there.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's
Is that going back like the 90s?
When the Millennium Stadium was getting built.
Okay.
Wales played Anfield at least once.
I enjoyed the ridiculousness of France Italy.
It wasn't very good, though.
No, it wasn't.
That's the problem. There were moments of individual brilliance from both teams, actually. But there were far more moments of incompetence from both teams. I will also mention, I thought Remy Grosso had a great game.
Yeah, he did.
On the wing. Big, strong. He's 29. I thought he was some youngster.
Gabriel, I don't know how to pronounce
the
it.
The second row.
Where's Eddie Butler when you need him?
Yeah. French team names aren't my strong suit, I'm going to say.
The second row that wasn't giving away all the penalties.
Yes. Yes, the one that isn't being penalised.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did France bring back their suspended players for next game?
Yeah.
I'm not... They might bring back some, but I'm not sure. So Teddy Thomas would be great to bring back.
Yes, he would.
Pickermans is always great to bring back.
Teddy Thomas versus Johnny May on the wing should be electric.
Be good fun.
People keep talking about Italy. Oh, their conditioning's much better. They're bad.
I've said this every single game. Italy have four or five very good players. Minozzi, Boni, Negri, Parise. The rest of them are just average rugby players, average club players.
Yeah.
Who are... Well, Zani's a decent player.
But they have their classic 20-minute capitulation at the end.
Yeah.
Just what Italy do.
Just...
What are they going to do when Parise's not there?
I'd get rid of him, personally. Because he's just too important. I think he's like a crutch for them. Like, you know, boys, you have to learn to live without him. You know, we're going to move on.
Yeah, I think he'll get to the next World Cup. Because even his experience and his leadership and his captaincy is important.
Is it? For what? I mean, it'd be important if they were winning.
if he'd ever had an experience of winning a game.
Exactly. I mean, if these were like 50-50 arm wrestles and just needed, you know, experienced captain to make the right call, is it line out or points to win the game? By all means, pick him. But I just don't see the point, though.
Yeah.
He should go to France and get a massive contract. Oh, hang on.
Yeah. It is incredible the number of tests he's played, considering for virtually the entirety of his career, in the rest weekends of the Six Nations, he's been playing against Montpellier or Toulouse or Toulon.
Yeah.
So he's playing... The Six Nations over 7 weeks. He's playing seven games in those seven weeks.
I mean, obviously he gets a lot of money in France. But he wouldn't be a terrible signing for a Premiership team wanting to make a major splash for next season as the marquee player.
Yeah. I think, so in terms of name and status, he'd be brilliant. I think you could probably, for a lot less money, get... Because I do think, I said it last year and I was incorrect, I do think his performances this year have not been some of his brilliant best.
Mm. Yeah, the only problem with him coming over here is where would he go? And the reason I say that is not because he'd fit into any team. But at the moment, he's tall, he's handsome, he's ripped, and he looks great in the Stad kit. Which kit would he look best in?
We
only deal with the important issues here.
Which Premiership kit would he look best in?
Bath.
Oh,
yeah.
That's it.
He'd look incredible in a Bath kit.
Okay, so let's construct the narrative now. Toby Faletau is out. He's going to Dragons.
Goes back to.
They've got an eight-shaped hole they need to fill.
And a marquee-shaped hole.
Yeah. And to Lupe Faletau, how much he would have loved to have been playing for Dragons this weekend at whatever small club it was, not actually at Rodney Parade. They played at a club which Richard Cockerell complained that Edinburgh had to walk over 100 metres to get to the pitch.
Yeah.
From the and they were in some like hockey changing room with the old school pegs.
So I quite like this. They've started.
So Faletau's gone back to Dragons.
Yeah.
That's a match made in heaven. Because do you know what else? The advertising, the Roman baths.
Oh,
perfect.
I'm gonna get on.
Get him in a toga.
Yeah.
This is so good.
It's such a good fit. And
why aren't we in marketing?
One for the future as well. Zach Mercer to learn from.
Oh yeah,
one of the all-time.
Oh yes, yeah. That's the apprentice and
put
the...
it on my board. Pre-say's a Bath.
Now that is a JB prediction that I can definitely get behind.
I'm totally behind that one. Oh, that should happen. There's no other side that I would rather see him play for.
I guess the only if he lived in Manchester and played for Sale, perhaps. So I'm not particularly.
No, that'd
sure
be
that's a great match.
Seeing him in a half-empty stadium, but next to a sewage works,
no,
under the M60 bridge. That's not befitting of a legend.
I'm thinking.
I think you're very dismissive of major city infrastructure there, Tim. Sewage works. I don't think demeaning it.
The Romans probably invented sewage works.
I don't think it in any way enhances your reputation as a broadcaster or a person, actually.
To be honest, I'm not thinking of seeing him at the AJ Bell. I don't really care about that. I'm thinking of seeing him at a bar in Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Now you're talking. And you can also get to watch him now. You can use the Diamond Lane to get to Sale.
Yeah.
It's nice and easy.
And actually, he would be one of the greatest ambassadors for rugby amongst the female fraternity of Manchester.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we need Manchester's a city that could do with people turning onto the wonders of rugby.
Yeah, quite.
Danny Cipriani's done his bit.
He did his bit.
And
Marlon Yard now.
Why don't we give Marlon Yard the occasional night off?
Marlon and Denny, cut loose, guys.
Come on, James.
James will come.
Guys, call it a night.
Loose.
Right, well, where were we?
Italy, France. The one stat that I think ties England and Italy, two of the three losers together, is Italy gave away 16 penalties. England gave away 13 penalties.
Yeah.
England also gave away 15 turnovers. You can't, basically, however good or not good you are, you cannot win international rugby matches with stats like that. Which is no news, but it's...
Yeah, it should be no shock to anyone.
No.
And England, it is a real problem now.
That's 10 against Wales, 13 against Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's round it off with this and for the internationals. I think England are going to have a torrid time under Eddie. I think Eddie under pressure is going to really upset his squad, and I can't wait for the France game.
France game will be interesting. Did you see the Eddie... any of his post-match
stuff. I saw it all. He seemed quite reasonable, actually.
Well, so he came across to me very, very angry. But he said the right things, as in he didn't criticise his own players. He was very complimentary towards Scotland.
And he said, blame me.
Yeah,
in the longer post-match chat, he said, blame me. It's my job to get them ready to play a game, and I clearly didn't do my job because they weren't ready. They weren't in the right frame of mind. So I think he thinks it was more of an attitude, and they just seemed like they weren't at the races in the first half. That's, again, once again, returning back to the start, that's in no way to take away from an outstanding performance, because that was partly inflicted because Scotland was so on it.
Scotland were exceptional. If only they'd... we're going back to the consistency, but if only they played like that against Wales, they'd be in the hunt for a Grand Slam.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Anyway, downfall. Hashtag us downfall 2018. It is happening. It's a thing now.
Do you know what? If they, because going away to France is not easy, and I think that's what this weekend has said. All three rounds so far has said home advantage in international rugby is massive. Mm. It is huge.
Who have Ireland got? Italy.
No, they've got Scotland.
Oh, that's going to be nice.
Scotland at home, and then they've got England away.
Yeah.
So again, Ireland in Dublin, it's fine. But England going to France is going to be tough.
Yes.
And then England Twickenham. This is me willing it to happen. Scotland are going to sneak a win against Ireland. England will beat France, and then all three teams can win the championship on the final weekend.
I see where your mind is like that.
That'd be great.
Just purely from an English point of view, is it better that Ireland lose against Scotland and then get a bit of a bollocking pre-England game, or is it better if they sort of just go through? Which one do you prefer? So Ireland on a loss or Ireland on a great performance?
If Ireland were on a loss and then lost to England, an Ireland team that lose two games takes the heat off England's failings, but that's not the point.
And if Ireland lose, it means they no longer have the JB Cup on the line, so they would.
Oh yeah,
they
trying
as hard.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. That's Eddie's game plan, really.
But they mustn't be far off from like. Hang on, did they win all their autumns?
Yeah. So they did win all their autumns. Last time they lost was the first game of last season's Six Nations. So they're on about.
Oh yeah, they lost to Wales. Scotland. They lost to Scotland at Murrayfield.
No, they lost to Wales.
No, with
they?
the bus late and everything. Was that them?
Was it Scotland? They lost one of the early games last.
They lost at Murrayfield when because it was the one where the bus was late, caught in traffic or something. They caught them cold. Was that right?
I think that is right. Let's have a quick look. Scotland beat them first round last time. 27-22.
So they're now on four games there, then three in the summer.
Two or three in the summer because of the Lions, and then three or four.
They mustn't be far off that record.
So, oh no, they're about 10 games off the record.
Are they? Well, what is the record?
18.
England.
England and New Zealand are both tied on 18, and they are 8 or 9 for Ireland at the moment.
And England have got to start all the way again. I wonder how many games is the World Cup final. Would that be 19 from now for England? There we go. That's what it's all about. just trying to win the JB Cup and the World Cup at the same time.
Imagine that. Two different stages.
Which one would they lift first?
Yeah.
They'd lift the World Cup first. Really celebrate.
Yes, exactly. Get the little one out of the way.
Yeah.
Drinking from the JB Cup.
Well, yeah, I'm not signed up to downfall 2018, but I am concerned. Yeah. I am concerned,
and there is certainly some merit to the points that you are making.
Yes, there is.
Marcus Smith, that's the next one. Here he comes.
and if South Africa do get all their international players for June, and England do rest some players, then 3-0 is not beyond the realms of possibility to South Africa.
I think resting some players is a very good idea. Particularly given that half the England team will be playing in the Premiership final probably the week before the first test is supposed to kick off.
Oh, God, yeah, they will, won't they? Let's assume it's Saracens Exeter again.
Yeah. So there you've got...
12?
Yeah, it could be that many. At least 8 or 9.
Oh, goodness me. And with that, we will say that we will be talking about domestic rugby on the podcast, which is coming next in this feed. So hit subscribe, tell your mates, and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.